The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet.
PaintZen.com, your one-stop shop for all your house painting needs without ever leaving home. PaintZen takes all the stress out of getting your house or apartment painted, interior or exterior. Skip the hassle of finding and scheduling painters, waiting on contractors, or getting inconsistent work. Receive a fast, free, guaranteed quote online in just minutes at PaintZen.com. PaintZen's friendly staff will guide you through from start to finish, either on the phone or online, and offer a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Get inspiration and assistance with color selection, free swatch samples, and color consultations. And fully vetted, licensed, and insured on-demand painters can get started in as little as 48 hours. Listeners to this podcast will receive $100 off their next paint project by visiting paintzen.com/podcast and using promo code PODCAST. Visit PaintZen, PaintZen.com/podcast for your $100 discount today. Conditions apply. Get the job done with high quality at the right price at PaintZen.com/podcast with promo code PODCAST. PaintZen, the easiest way to get your home painted.
All right, listen to the Steve Austin Show. Pay attention. I want to keep this podcast free to download with minimal ads. And to do so, I would appreciate your participation in a Podcast One survey. Either go to podcastone.com/mysurvey or visit Podcast One, that's podcastone.com, and click on the survey banner. Thank you. This episode of the Steve Austin Show is sponsored in part by DDP Yoga. All right, guys, you probably heard that I did my very first DDPY workout with Dallas a few weeks ago, and I was really impressed by how much I liked it and how it made me feel. And I made a commitment. Everybody has to make a commitment to stick with the program for a few months, and I ain't backing down. I've been doing my regular workouts with DDP Yoga now using the app, and man, I can already feel a difference. And if you don't believe me, just check out this list of folks DDP has helped out with this program. Scott Hall, Goldust, Chris Jericho, Edge, Jake Roberts, AJ Styles, Drew McIntyre, Bobby Fish, Tony Schiavone, and Podcast One's own Chael Sonnen. Dallas is so positive that you'll absolutely love the DDPY program and using the DDPY app. He's doing something he ain't never done before. He's going to give you 7 days free to try it out. That's a week to try the program, explore the app, and own your life, and it's completely free. Listen, you're going to need a week because that's how comprehensive, that's how extensive this application is. All kinds of stuff in there from instructional, motivational, nutritional, everything you need to get your life on track. So that's why he's giving you 7 days to check it out. I encourage you to give it a shot. Check out the app. Check it out. It's 7 days free. You can't go wrong. Listen, DDP Yoga can work for all ages, weights, and fitness levels. It's a kick-ass cardio workout that will dramatically increase your flexibility and strengthen your core like never before, and that's all with minimal joint impact, and I can attest to that. Just for listeners of the Steve Austin Show, you can save 20% off an annual membership for the DDP Yoga Now app, which now features DDPY Rebuild. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Austin to get started. Also, Dallas will be in Raleigh, North Carolina, July 23rd and July 24th for the Raleigh Supercon. He'll be there signing autographs and taking pictures both days. And go ahead and start planning to attend the biggest DDPY workshop ever, happening September 1st at StarCast in Chicago, Illinois. Tickets for the workshop are on sale now. Get more details at ddpyogaworkshops.com.
The following program is a podcast1.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, everybody, welcome to Steve Austin Show. Why, I'm coming to you from the Silver State over here in Nevada at the Broken Skull Ranch 2.0. Getting ready to pack all of our stuff up and get back to the main streets of Los Angeles, California. Got a flight out of here at about 1 o'clock. Put us into Los Angeles about 10 minutes after 2. And then get back and get on with business. Got some cool guests coming up for you. And I tell you what, man, I've really enjoyed my time out here at the ranch here in Nevada. I got a chance to get out in the damn mountains on my Kawasaki Mule Pro FXT and my god dang Brute Force 750. And I'll tell you what, man, as much as I love that Kawasaki Mule for hunting and doing all of my utility work around here on the ranch, man, that Brute Force 750 is an absolute beast. You know, side-by-side market has really exploded in the past few years, and the four-wheeler division has kind of fallen off, and I don't know why. When I was riding down in South Texas, I had my Kawasaki mules, and those were predominantly what I drove. We're driving on flat terrain, and we're getting work done. And when you get out here, out in these mountains, and we're not working so much, we're doing a little bit more playing. I'll tell you what, man, I had a four-wheeler in South Texas, and I rarely rode it just because everything was flat, just down a Sendero or down dirt roads, and there wasn't a whole lot to do but just go straight. And you really can't carry anything on them, so they're not that great for work. But for out here, for what I'm doing, just playing, oh, my God. I'll tell you what, man, I've just rediscovered the four-wheeler, the ATV, at a whole nother level. I'm out there going up some technical stuff at really steep inclines. I'm going down stuff, going over rocks, loose pack, mountains with, you know, rocks the size of softballs and footballs. And I'll tell you what, it takes you a while to get your technique to come downhill without burning out your brakes. And if any of you guys got any experience on going up and down very steep terrain on a ATV, send me some of your tips on how you do it to questions@steveaustinshow.com. Because when I lock my four-wheeler into four-wheel low, I tell you what, that transmission and all that engine brake or whatever it is, the way that CVT locks in, and low gear, you know, make you drag your rear tires, and your back end wants to come up around you, and that's not good. So what I ended up doing was leaving it in high gear, and then actually I even took it out of four-wheel drive on the descent. On the incline stuff, I'll keep it in four-wheel drive and run low. So I got as much power as I need, up to 25 miles an hour. But coming down, man, that stuff can get pretty tricky. And I tell you what, it'll make you clench your ass up on some of the damn situations you can get in out here. And I've been really enjoying riding out here in these mountains and big hills and mountains and the kind of terrain it is. I love South Texas, and that's where I was born and raised. But riding a four-wheeler out there, I didn't drive in a whole lot of mud. But out here, man, you can really just hit that thumb throttle on that Brute Force 750, and the torque on that V-twin and the way that thing howls is addicting, at the very least. I took off yesterday, and I pulled over at the BLM that I was riding at, and I looked in my back pocket. My phone had been ringing. It was my wife. She says, "Where are you?" I said, "Well, I'm over here a couple of miles from the house riding." She said, "You didn't tell me you was going to go riding." I was thinking, man, anytime I get a chance, I get on that damn four-wheeler and I get out in those mountains and ride. So I'm having a blast. If you're looking for something, a toy to get out there in the outdoors at, man, check into a four-wheeler, man. They are an absolute blast. Mine's a 750. I don't think I need any more power than that 750 has to offer. But I'm not trying to say you Brute Force 750, but they're awesome. But go check out a four-wheeler, man. Whatever brand is your flavor, go check out. But those things are amazingly fun. And out here in this terrain, I'm really enjoying it. So anyway, got all my buggies washed up. I got my pressure washer. I got my old Subaru pressure washer. I think it's got 3,100 pounds of pressure. Man, I hook that thing up to my water hose. I wash my Dodge Ram Charger. I put a coat of wax on that thing. I was very disappointed. You know, when we shoot Broken Skull Challenge, which has been canceled, it's not going to be on the air anymore. But when you shoot Broken Skull Challenge, they've got to cover up all the signs on the vehicles that I drove. So they put tape and stuff all over the Dodge Ram and all over the Ram Charger decals. And when I was peeling the tape off the tailgate, all of my Dodge Ram letters came off because of the layer of tape that they put on top of them. And as I was removing the tape, all the letters came off. They left all the glue resin on all the decals. I had to get some Goo Gone and spray on there multiple times and just scrub my ass off to get everything off that Ram Charger. And then, of course, my Ram hood ornament, that famous Ram Charger hood ornament, they had never even put that back on. They left that skull on there. And in the process, as I was trying to put the ram head back on there, that iconic symbol that took all the guts out of it. So now I ain't even got the ability to attach the ram head without going to a body shop or ordering some parts for it. So I was a little pissed off about the art department leaving my vehicle in such a pile of shit method without having any pride to take them stickers off, man. I tell you what, that chaps my ass. But got a coat of wax on that, washed all my mules. I got them hooked up to battery tenders. I got my KLX-450 on a battery charger. And I went and bought a brand new battery for my jet ski. I'm going to take my 310LX out next time I come to Nevada. I think we're going to come down here for the 4th of July. And I'm looking forward to sticking that thing in the lake and getting out there and riding on that thing. I'll tell you what, having that thing in Marina Del Rey was really cool, but just riding out there in the Pacific Ocean, there just ain't no place to pull over. When I used to go out there and film Redneck Island, Lake Hartwell, man, you could pull over at someone's dock. You could pull over someone's beach if you got turned around. But when you get out in the ocean, man, you're like a cork bobbing around. And if you get a little bit turned around, which you can tend to do just because you're about 3 feet off the surface of the water and you can't see that great, it's a little discombobulating. And then also just with the white caps, with the swells, it's a big-ass ocean. So I'm going to get out here in some of these small-ass lakes and zip around here because I've been scouting around for some of the locations to use, and the water out here is like glass. And if you guys out there in the jet skis or water skiing or wakeboarding or whatever, man, you know how important that glass is. And when you find some good water like that, you can just really cut up and have a good time. So been out here on some hiking trails. There's a place that I go ride my four-wheeler at, and I'll walk up and down that damn mountain once or twice, three times a week. Just to kind of get in a little bit of cardio shape from climbing. I think we're close to 5,000 feet in altitude over here, just right under 5,000. So we're not high altitude. It's not like training in Denver or Colorado or something like that. But getting ready for deer season coming up here in a couple of months, man, you can be in all kinds of pre-core elliptical shape you want, but unless you're in walking shape, carrying a backpack with some weight in the back of your backpack, you know, like you're going to pack a deer out, man, you're going to be huffing and puffing. And when I go hunting with my damn brother-in-law, Mitch, that mountain man son of a bitch, he's 6'7", 280 pounds, and that dude takes his big-ass long strides, and he don't never get tired. He don't work out. He just walks the mountains all the time because he traps, he guides, he fishes, he hunts, he does it all. And he's used to walking in those mountains. So if you're a city slicker, you better get your damn cardio on so you can get up and down these mountains. So that's what I've been doing. Just been a lot of different things out here that I'm enjoying. And it's just so different from South Texas, which I do miss, definitely. I don't miss the temperature. It's probably about 105, 106 out there in South Texas right now. I think it got up to about 93, 94 this past trip up here in Nevada. So it does get a little warm up here, no doubt, but not as extreme intense heat as South Texas. And it's a lot drier climate over here. So I'm really enjoying it. I do miss that brush country of South Texas, that magical brush country and those white-tailed deer. But there's a little town we drive through all the time out here. Man, there's mule deer hanging all over the side of the road, which I almost hit in my damn new pickup truck, my Z71 Duramax. I almost hit three deer. Luckily, a bird was in the road. I slowed down so I wouldn't hit the bird. And then right after the bird flew off, which I missed him, three deer popped out. So the bird slowed me down, and then I was able to apply the brakes and not hit those damn does that were in the middle of the road. That would have been a disaster. I would have killed a couple of deer and banged up my brand new pickup truck. That would have sucked on everybody's end. But anyway, enough about all the stuff I'm doing out here, man. I'm just I'm having a good time. Having been able to talk too much, or I haven't talked too much about what I actually do over here. But that's what I do most of, is I ride my buggies, I explore, kind of navigate, and I just enjoy the challenge of technical terrain on the four-wheeler and on the Kawasaki mule, and get a Terex out there and blast around a little bit and do some exploring on that with some extra gas. So the great outdoors is calling my name, and I'm able to go out there and enjoy it as much as I can. I'm looking forward to getting some fishing done next time I come back. That's the bottom line. But anyway, enough about this rambling, man. I'm about to get ready to get out of here, catch a flight back to LA. Enzo Amore, former WWE superstar, stopped by 317 Gimmick Street, and we chopped it up and talked about the wrestling business. We talked about the music business and he's talking about where he's going and where he's been and what he's up to and his goals. So I think you'll enjoy my conversation with Enzo Amore, also known as @RealOne. I believe that's on Instagram, maybe even Twitter as well. We'll get that covered in the podcast. I think you'll enjoy my conversation. I've always enjoyed Enzo, and I enjoyed him and Big Cass as a tag team before WWE split them up. And then, you know, Enzo got let go. We'll talk about that. Big Cass just got let go, what, about a week ago, for reasons I do not know. People said it was because he went out on a limb and didn't stick to the script. Well, I'm calling bullshit on that one. Whatever he did, maybe he did go off script and do something, but I don't think they would fire him just for that. So I don't know the reasons, but people kind of reaching out to me on social media, on Twitter, and saying, hey, Steve, you're always telling everybody to go out on a limb and push the envelope. Well, look what it did for Big Cass. That ain't why Big Cass got fired. I don't know why he got fired, but if he had enough guts to go out on a limb and give something to try, more power to him. So if you tried to get on Twitter and set me straight, that ain't what got him fired, brother. So whatever happened, I wish Big Cass all the luck in the world. He's a good dude, got loads of potential, good size, good-looking kid. So I wish him luck down the road. And if he ever stops through L.A., I'd love to talk to him on the podcast. But before we get to RealOne, check this out. The classic Nickelodeon show Double Dare is back. On the all-new Double Dare, the trivia is tough. The challenges are rough, and the giant nose is stuffed. Don't miss a single sloppy second of it. Hosts Lay Zakoshi and Double Dare legend Mark Summers are bringing you the messiest game on TV. Don't miss the all-new Double Dare. Weeknights at 8, 7 Central, only on Nickelodeon.
There's never a dull week in the world of professional wrestling, so to keep up on all of it, be sure to subscribe to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast here at Podcast One. I produce two new shows each week. Every Thursday on our flagship show, I'm joined by a co-host from the wrestling journalism field to talk about the hot topics in WWE and elsewhere. Every Friday, I'm joined by a guest who has worked in the wrestling business, including ex-WWE creative team members like Kevin Eck talking about Drew McIntyre.
Drew was a young guy, and did it go to his head, and did he walk around like he was the chosen one? He did, and I was frank with him, and I said, Drew, just so you know, this is how they view you.
And Podcast One's own Christian Harloff, talking about his days working for WWE, and Vince McMahon specifically.
As far as the perception of him, I mean, he's the king. He walks in, and it's just, you can feel it. I mean, if the force was real, you would feel the force powering into the room when he enters.
Just search Wade Keller on Apple Podcasts or on the Podcast One app or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
All right, we roll us out here at 317 Gimmick Street. Enzo Amore, a.k.a. RealOne, sitting across the table from me. And damn, it's good to see you. I was sitting here. This is one of the earliest podcasts I've ever done. It's 10 a.m.
Wait. You've done an earlier one.
Yeah, I have.
But with me.
This is still in my top three. I seen a car come up and park behind that red car that's been parked out in front of my house. I said, man, that looked like Enzo flying up in here. He says, man, you got the parallel parking skills down. But then I seen you pull up and back about three times. What happened? Running a little off kilter.
Oh, man. Well,
coming
let's just
from,
say,
coming from if the it was tri-state the vet, area, if it, dude, if, everybody from a tri-state area knows how to parallel
park. Oh, yeah, you're right. But I wasn't thinking I was parallel parking. So what happened was if it was the golf Corvette and I drove that shit down here, I would have been parallel parked Tokyo Drift that bad boy right in that. But this thing.
You got a Corvette? But,
yeah.
What year?
96.
Are you kidding me?
Nah.
I didn't know you was a car guy. Man, I've been I've had three Corvettes in my life, and I sold them. The last one was an 07. I was out here in L.A., and I said, man, I'm tired of getting in and out of this sumbitch, you know?
I know, getting in and out the bucket.
And the doors kind of scissor out. I mean, so, like, you know,
dude,
if someone parks close
to my
you,
knee.
They mess you up.
Ugh.
So now, but I don't like the new body styles. My buddy's got one, and there's not enough shoulder room in there for me. So I'm looking for the 13, which is the last. That would be a C6. So I'm looking for a 13 model.
Sexy.
But that's probably not the greatest investment. But I'm not buying it as an investment.
Well, the vet engine, man, it ain't going to change.
So yours
was
a 96. 96.
It was the last year that they were really the collector's edition. I got it stock, so I didn't touch it at all. It looks like the same car for 96.
Good for you. How many
it's
miles?
Not 42,000 now.
Oh, dude.
I put 10,000 on it.
You drive a shit out of it? You didn't take it easy?
I just put 10,000 on it over 2 years, basically, a year and a half. year and a half. So it's not much. But you know what it was is whenever we were on the West Coast, I top down. I'm driving down to Anaheim. You know, I'm driving to San Diego. I'm going to Phoenix, bro. I'm taking a vet. You know, on my own accord when I was doing West Coast travel a lot. Like I would shot up to Sacramento in it. Avoid the flight. I'd rather take a 5-hour drive in my vet than hopping, you know, a rental or jumping in and out of. What's that?
What color?
Silver. To me, it's a step away from the DeLorean, bro. I'm a big Back to the Future mark, bro. So, like, I want Marty McFly. You know, I want that DeLorean bad. But, you know, I ain't there yet. So,
how long you had
settle
that
for the vet, bro? For one, when I was in NXT, I didn't have a car. I drove a Harley. I drove a Harley Davidson to work. And then at the time, I had been leasing a Dodge Dart. So I was broke, bro. I don't know damn money.
I've been here.
Yeah. So the Dodge Dart I called the Gianna Mobile because I gave it to my ex, Liv Morgan, Gianna. And she put dents. She didn't know how to drive. So she learned how to drive in that Dodge Dart. So we called it the Gianna Mobile and just chalked it up as an L, bro. The craziest shit about this thing is it got stolen and found totaled on the side of the highway, taken right out of Gianna's driveway when I was in Orlando. Cause I was still talking to her when, you know, like we were very good friends and stuff, you know. So she was still, I let her have that car. She had the Dodge Dart when I wasn't with her, and then I get a phone call. She's on the road or whatever for NXT. I get a phone call from my buddy Tante on Thanksgiving, wakes up like, yeah, the Dart's not in the driveway. I don't know what happened. I'm like, I was dealing with that nightmare in and out of impounds, found the car, bro. It was so funny. When I got the phone call, they found it. The Gianna Mobile, bro, Liv Morgan's whip, just absolutely demolished, and I still don't know what happened to it.
Are you guys still an item or no?
Oh, me and Liv? Yeah. No, we've been broken up for a couple of years.
Oh, okay.
About a year.
What was it way back in the day?
Man, when I was in NXT, I dated Liv and lived with her. And she actually still lives with my roommate. So my best friend from like elementary school still lives with my ex, Liv, out there in Orlando. This is where we start our conversation. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, well, I didn't know where to start the conversation.
There's
a hell of a lot to talk about.
But yeah, no, I was driving a Harley, bro. Crazy shit about that. I never had ridden a motorcycle in my life. I bought the Harley, never got a license for it, and drove it everywhere.
That's the same thing with me. When I was riding, my roommate had a Suzuki GS425 in junior college. He goes, hey, man, he was a country guy. He goes, hey, man, if you ever want to borrow my motorcycle, just ride it whenever you want to. Well, I'd ride a sumbitch all over the place. So these days, I got a little scooter, and I got a dirt bike, but I just kind of put it
on. We got a couple dirt bikes, the vet, the Harley. My brother needed a car for being out here, so I got him that 96 Lexus.
Yeah.
That's what he drives. But, yeah, we got some engines at the house.
But I never have got my motorcycle license yet. Nah. Dude, that's been a long time since I've been riding around the streets. But hey, it's not like I'm putting miles on anything. So, dude, last time I saw you was Raw 25. I don't know if you remember this or not.
How could you forget? It's story of infamy. It's going to go down in history and lore.
Dude, but I saw you and I don't know if we'd seen each other. That's the first time we saw each other.
You were the first person I saw. I turned the corner when I got to the building and you were standing there with Bubba Ray Dudley, who I debuted against, who's one of the only guys that I still talk to like that, I would say veterans in the business that, you know, I didn't work at you and Bubba Ray, probably really the only two I talked to. So like Bubba and you just coincidentally standing there in the hallway, the two veterans that I like communicate with that aren't in the company. I'm like, oh wow. Stop talking to you guys. I was wearing a shirt that said, today is the best day of my life. I can't wait for tomorrow. It was written on the back of it.
But something was up, and then all of a sudden, after you passed by...
Well, no, I had no idea at that point.
No?
When I saw you guys, I was talking to you guys in the hallway like I just showed up to work. It was another day at the office, bro. I was talking to you guys, and then I go on to do rehearsals with Goldust for our match. Me and Goldust have a match for Raw 25. And then the Dudleys are coming out. They're going to put me through a golf table. You know, do the wazzup, jump off the top rope, headbutt the nuts. They have all this plan. I'm going to lose my title, my Cruiserweight Championship, to Ted DiBiase. And the APA at their poker game backstage with the Million Dollar Man, a poker game thread that starts Raw 25 and has all the veterans that are coming in and out of this poker game throughout the entire thread of Raw 25. And I lose my title to Ted DiBiase. Then I go out to the ring with no title. I wrestle Goldust. Meanwhile, you know, Dusty, obviously, my mentor, and Raw 25, I'm wrestling Goldust one-on-one. Like, what? Are you kidding? And then the Dudleys are coming out. Like, I'm best day of my life. This is the best day of my life. Then I come back. Nia wins my title back for me because I lose it playing poker. And she gives it back to me at the end of the night. So she wins my title back for me. So I had the longest thread in all of Raw 25. I was going to be on the show, probably featured more than anyone. And they had to rewrite that whole fucking show at like, what, 5:30, 6 p.m.? Vince was running around backstage. The Headless Horseman, dude, like insanity. It was crazy. And I found out about this while I was going through rehearsals with the APA. So my phone keeps blowing up. People are texting me. I'm like, well, people texting me. Why does my phone keep ringing? I'm going to these rehearsals. And I look, I see the tweet, and I see that's how I found out. So I didn't know anything. That was it. I called Mark Carano immediately from, you know, I wasn't in the locker room. I didn't change the locker room. I changed by myself. So I'm off changing by myself. Call Mark. I'm like, hey, man, we need to talk. So he's like, yeah, no shit. So link up with a lawyer for the WWE in-house attorney and Adam Hopkins from PR. And they asked me about the situation. And I'm just completely transparent. I'm like, bro, I called my lawyer because I was running around by myself before I called Mark Carano backstage in a laundry room. I was in a laundry room calling my lawyer. I was like, yo, guy, get on the phone, get this shit handled right fucking now. You know, like, holy crow, this is crazy. And then I called Carano. And then I'm like, yeah, man, I just told my lawyer. I paid him whatever you need as a retainer to sort this thing out. You know, like the police had never contacted me about this, not once leading up to this, not one time. So I walk in. Now, mind you this, I have a buddy who, let me just be clear about the situation. It's the first time I'm really telling it. So I'm sitting here with you, I'm telling it. I have a friend who called me in December who got me backstage at that Red Hot Chili Peppers concert. Like, man, you know what? That's another thing, dog. Like, people say, like, Enzo was really living the life and toeing the line and living dangerously because as a celebrity, you have a target on your back, and you know that, and I know that. And I don't look at myself as a victim. I am not a victim here. I put myself in that situation. But you know what? I look back at it, and I go in retrospect, man, you could do things differently. But you know what, man? 10 out of 10 times, I'm going backstage to a Red Hot Chili Peppers concert. You know, I'm gonna bend my elbow and I'm gonna get drunk and I'm gonna dance and I'm gonna sing and I'm gonna probably meet a girl, you know, and that's how it goes, and that's the life. And I wasn't complaining about what, you know, what I did that night. So I got a buddy of mine who hit me up and was like, hey man, my girlfriend who was there with me that night at the thing, he's like, my girlfriend got an email from a guy saying he was an investigator, saying that some girl made a claim against a wrestler. Never mentioned my name, but obviously I knew what he was kind of talking about. And that was when I called my lawyer immediately. And I was like, find out what's going on here. Now, I didn't have to pay my lawyer to do that. I just called my lawyer, and this is in December. And he calls up, and there's nothing going on. There's no investigation that he finds out about, my lawyer. Finds out about nothing. So there's no charges pressed against me because it's real simple. When you get charged with rape or a crime, you pick up the phone and you call the police station like my lawyer did and go, hey, is this guy charged with rape, a crime? No. Okay. Bye. You know what I mean? Like that's all that I knew was that an email from an investigator who did not claim to be a police officer, did not say he was a police officer. We didn't even respond to the email. Like my friend's girlfriend, I don't even know if they ever communicated because it was just like, oh, an investigator's reaching out. Like this isn't a cop. Scary, weird shit. I'm not even going to answer this, you know, because if it's a cop, they'll call you.
Right.
They'll find you. Now, if someone gets raped, usually within 24 hours, there's a warrant out for that arrest. All right. Now this claim happened in October. All right. And this accuser apparently was in and out of rehab. was going to get in trouble with the law and their parents for doing drugs that they had apparently popped on at a hospital when they claimed that they were raped, and the police didn't even take the threat seriously at all. Like, apparently they stood there and listened to this girl say these things and never called me. All right? So if they never call me when this happens, and then this person puts this tweet out there on Raw 25, which is not a coincidence, the police still to this point have never called me or contacted me. Not one f***ing time. I'm not made aware of anything that's going on. Anything. Outside of the fact that I have a friend that gets an email saying from a person claiming to be an investigator that there was a wrestler involved in a night and they wanted to inquire more information. That doesn't mean that they said there was a rape case or anything. They didn't say anything like that. So I don't even know these details. You know what I'm saying? I find out just like everyone else in the world with a tweet practically. So when this happens, I make Vince aware immediately because I go right to Vince. You know, what else are you gonna do? He's like, man.
So do this right before Monday Night Raw.
Oh, this is
hey, Vince, I got to talk. This is really important.
No,
hey,
no.
Not right now, Enzo. Not right now. Or did you say, hey, man, I got something really important?
Oh, no. This is, mind you, the company is aware of this.
Okay.
Just as I am made aware. This tweet goes out, and the company is running around backstage, and you know how backstage is. So they don't know where I am. They're trying to find me. They're calling my phone. I call my lawyer before I get in touch with anybody. I call my lawyer immediately. I go, man, get in contact with the police. Find out what the hell's going on. So before I can even find out anything that's going on, I go see Vince. You know, he's the first person I go see. Yeah. Are you kidding me? Give me a break. You get cut, you know, this. So I go see Vince, and he says, you know, we can't send you out there tonight. You know, we can't put you on the show. You know, this tweet, this is really bad.
What'd you say?
I didn't say anything. I stood there and I let Vince talk for a minute. And I said, the first thing I said was, I said, you know, and I know that I didn't do this and I deserve better than this because I'm a good person. And I walked out. And Vince said to me, you got to tell me when something like this is happening. When something, I said, man, I didn't know, but I knew that there was that email. There was an email that came in to a friend from a person that was an investigator that never claimed to be a police officer.
But how long before had the email happened?
I found out like around Christmas.
Okay. So, yeah.
About a month. But like, even when I found that out, man, why would I? Why? Are you crazy? You think I'm going to go tell somebody? Yeah. Like, but you know what? It wasn't even a thought in my mind because when I called immediately when I found out from my friend that there was that email, I called my lawyer who called the police and said that there was nothing happening. Had they told me I was under investigation, I would have went to Vince and told him. But I did not know that I was under investigation.
Yeah, you get one email, you blow it off, hey, whatever. And then you make a call, hey, nothing's going on, so drop it.
Drop it.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I bring it up again.
Hey, man, you got other things going on.
Got a lot going on, and I'm a good guy, and I'm not thinking too much about this shit, you know? Like, for me, this is the first time and pretty much the only time I'd ever really talked about this incident in detail like this. So, you know, I walked into Vince's office. I told him I was a good person. I didn't deserve this. I walked out in the hall. As I was walking down the hallway at the Barclays Center, he told me, you know, go home. I said to him, well, I guess I'm on my way to D.C., you know, SmackDown's in D.C.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right, you're sending me. He goes, go home and wait to hear from us, and we'll tell you if we need you to come to SmackDown tomorrow, you know? Like, at that point, I had no idea that I was suspended or being fired. And the way it was kind of relayed to me was like, okay, like, I guess I'm going to D.C. tomorrow. I'm playing it by ear. I'm waiting here. I walk down the hallway, and I see Adam Hopkins. And I see Adam, and I'm like, is there any further information? Have you guys gathered any further information? Like, on a legal tip, you know what I mean? And he says, blah, blah, blah. And then he informs me that I've been suspended, and the tweet already went out. I was just in the room with Vince. He told me I was sent home. He told me maybe D.C. tomorrow. I didn't hear that I was suspended.
So Adam told you were suspended.
Adam told me, and I had just stepped out of Vince's office. So when I heard that, I grabbed Carano immediately. I saw him just by chance or something. And I said, I'm never going to forget this. I said, look at me right now. I'm fucking out of here, and I'm not going to forget this. And I walked out a lot of emotions. I turned my phone on airplane mode, and I dipped out of Barclays Center. I know where I am when I go from Brooklyn to my sister's house in Delaware. I escaped. I got in the car. I drove to Delaware, my sister's house, immediately from Raw. And I recorded myself speaking the entire drive. And I have that footage, and I don't know what I'm ever going to do with it, but I have it. And I'm sitting there, and I'm driving, and I'm like, here's where I stood. 6 years I put, basically, the better part of, you know, everything in me, every bit of my soul into what I was doing. And to have it all taken away from you is a reality check. Like, it's could all end so abruptly, like in this manner. That's why I was angry. I was mad in that moment. I was really mad. I was cursing in that fucking, in that camera the whole drive home, cussing this person, cussing that person, I'm sure. I don't know. I haven't watched the footage back of me talking, but I know it's worth money. So the next day, I'm sitting in my sister's house in Delaware dealing with this. And I get the phone call from Mark Carano. He says, you know, we're going to go the other way and we're going to fire you. So I said to him, consider this your loss, not mine. And I hung up the phone. I'm wearing a shirt that says, today's the best day of my life. I can't wait for tomorrow. Tomorrow I get fired. Okay. I look back at my career and I'm like, I can't even believe that shit happened to me. I can't believe. I was in the room when the Hardy Boys came out and the place fucking blew, dude. The whole match was built around me and Cass. They come out. It was, those are my heroes as a kid.
Yeah.
And then I go on and I win this title and I become a heel, which nobody ever really thought I could do, you know, like, and I, man, I was on fire as a heel. And then we go on the first ever cruiserweight championship tour, right? The last time I ever got into a wrestling ring was a main event for the first ever cruiserweight tour on the road in front of like 3,500, 4,000. I don't remember, maybe 1,200. I don't fucking know. It felt like as many at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
But I main evented that card, did meet and greets beforehand, met all those fans. It was amazing. It was literally the highlight of my career, right? Literally the highlight of my career. Those last, I did a show Saturday in New York, and then we did one in Massachusetts in Lowell, Mass. So we were like Albany and New York in Mass. First ever cruiserweight tour, and they went so well. The matches were killer. Guys tore it up, not me, but yeah. But Nia Jax, me, and Cedric Alexander, and I had this main event match, man, and it went so damn well. And I proved it to myself. There's no need.
When I hear you say the career words now, to me it sounds like, hey, man, you're done.
Done. 6 years.
6 years.
6 years. But people don't realize, man, I'm 31 years old, right? Broke my fucking leg in a wrestling ring in the WWE. Looked down. Saw my foot backwards. Had to start thinking then, what if this ends? At the time I was in NXT, I thought I was going to be fired. I was out for 9 months. That was the only time I missed any time in my career was that 9 months. And then 2 weeks with a concussion. Now, mind you this, that was the eye-opener. Now, I would have thought I would have been in the business for wrestling for the rest of my life if you would have talked to me 3 years ago, 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, probably 2 years ago, whenever that was. Man, I got knocked out cold on pay-per-view, well-publicized, like,
I remember. I
hit my head on a ring and the ring rope and hit that. I came to in a hospital bed. That was the first recollection I had to come and back to consciousness was, so bro, the second I went home, I started writing rap music and got into the studio. I mean, that was when it happened. Never wrestled.
Well, you saw the writing on the wall as far as, hey, this ain't gonna be that.
This ain't gonna be, this could end today.
Anytime.
This could end tomorrow. You right. Just don't know. What are you going to do when you're done wrestling, Eric? Like, Eric, what are you gonna do? When this shit's over, do you wanna be that corporate guy? Sucking the days, making the fucking rounds, saying hello to everybody, fucking drinking coffee. No, man. You can't put a cubicle around Enzo Amore. You can't put a cubicle around Eric Arndt. I am an entertainer by any and all means, and I'm going to always take stages, and I'll fall on my face on those stages without a care because I'm not scared to fail.
But what happened in the 4 to 5 months before you got cleared up? Well, what the hell happened?
So,
and that being said, so there's no heat between you and WWE, at least on your part.
Oh, man. You know, you have to understand when Vince, when I sat there with Vince that day, like he said, you know, this is bad timing. The women's first ever Royal Rumble is next week. The Me Too movement and the pendulum and everything that's swinging right now in one direction. And this girl, it couldn't have been on a worse day or time.
Right.
And the timing. We were in the midst as a company of a women's revolution with wrestling.
All right, let's take a quick pause for the calls and give big ups to Geico. Go to geico.com and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. That's right. Save hundreds of dollars on car insurance at Geico.com. Extra money in your pocket? It may just be the most rewarding thing you do today. Speaking of rewarding, why don't you reward your body with freedom from muscle cramps? If you're one of the millions of Americans who suffer from muscle cramps in your legs and feet, relief is finally in sight. TheraWorks Relief is a topical foam that's clinically proven to relieve muscle cramps fast and with daily use. TheraWorks Relief can even prevent muscle cramps before they start. Finally, you'll be able to get a good night's sleep and do all those activities you love and not worry about muscle cramps. TheraWorks Relief is a life-changing product, and best of all, you don't even need a prescription. It only takes minutes to apply, absorbs quickly, and it really works. It's time you made it yours as well. Get TheraWorks Relief today at select CVS, Rite Aid, and Walgreens pharmacies, or at TheraWorksRelief.com. That's TheraWorks Relief.com.
Napa Know-How.
Your broken AC may not be broken. It may just need a recharge with the Avalanche AC Recharge Kit. Just $39.99 plus an additional $15 prepaid Visa card by mail. Just pull the trigger and brr. The Avalanche AC Recharge Kit. Now $39.99 plus $15 prepaid Visa card. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa Know-How.
Napa Know-How.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores. Offer expires 6/30/18.
All right, listen to the Steve Austin Show. Got something for you. I want to keep this podcast free to download with minimal ads, and to do so, I would appreciate your participation in the Podcast One survey. The responses will help make sure that the right advertisers are matched up with you folks, the audience. And this survey is short, won't take no more than 5 minutes of your day. You can either go to podcastone.com/mysurvey or visit Podcast One. That's podcastone.com and click on the survey banner. This survey will go a long way in making the Steve Austin Show better, and that's the bottom line because I said so. Thank you. Did you know that 66% of men start to lose their hair by the time they're 35? Hell, it happened to me at 25. And that really chaps my ass, and it should bother you as well. If you like your hair, well, give the big double bird to baldness because Hims is here to save your damn hair. Hims is a wellness brand for the modern man, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and sexual wellness, making men's personal care trusted, easy, and affordable. Hims offers FDA-approved medical-grade products, personalized recommendations, plus convenient, confidential online consultation with a licensed doctor. There's no pharmacy lines, no waiting room. The products are shipped directly to your door, and Hims passes big savings along to you, offering prescription and generic for just a fraction of the price. Sound treatment and prevention backed by medicine and science. Look better, feel better, do better with Hims. For listeners of the Steve Austin Show, get a trial month of everything you need to keep your hair for just $5 while supplies last. Now, this would cost you hundreds of dollars if you went to a doctor's office or pharmacy, so what are you waiting for? Save some damn money and save your damn hair. Just go to forhims.com/unleash for all the details. That's forhims.com/unleash and stomp a mud hole into hair loss and walk it dry. One more time. That's forhims.com/unleash to get yourself a trial month for just $5.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
You just dropped two music videos. How did you hook up with World Star Hip Hop, how do you get into the studio and do all this? Did you front all this, or how does all that work?
Well, I fronted the most important investment I could have made in that whole endeavor was my little brother. I helped him pay for college and get a Red camera. So my little brother's an editor, cinematographer, shoots footage for major acts in music. And I've managed to bridge those connections for him, and he's managed to bridge a lot of those on his own as well. So he doesn't need me, and I don't need him. But when we work together, we don't need anybody else. So I cut the middleman out. I have the kid who can videotape me, edit it, and I got a team of people that work with me and believe in me in that regard. So really, if I wanted to make a movie, all I need is my brother.
So how long did it take you to come up with the lyrics for Phoenix?
I wrote them in Delaware. The first 2 months I spent in Delaware with my sister, my goddaughter, and my brother-in-law, working out, writing. And I wrote a movie treatment and a movie screenplay. At that time, I wrote about 8 songs, maybe 9. And then I knew as I was doing this stuff, I needed to get to LA to record the shits and to make some movies. So I spent about 2 months writing and all that. Now, here's the thing about that 4 months. Those 4 months consisted of me basically emailing or calling or trying to communicate through my lawyers with the police every day. And they would get back to me maybe 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later. What happened was, I think that when this girl made this tweet, they realized, oh, wait, this girl did claim this shit in October. But she was on her way to rehab and popping for drug tests. We didn't take it seriously. So we didn't even investigate it. So then when this tweet came out and my lawyers, now I'm paying out the yin yang to lawyers. All right. Now I'm not making money because I got fired. So I'm paying these lawyers to try to get in touch with the police to find out what's going on. The only thing we get out of this conversation for months is, there's an investigation and his name was brought up. Finally, through ridiculous communication, basically we had to threaten the police. It's like, if you guys don't, boom, we're going to every social media outlet, TMZ, you name it, and Enzo's going to start talking. You know what I mean? Eric's going to start talking to the media and burying you guys, because if someone did get raped here, if they did, you have let this sit here on your desk for 5 months and a tweet is the reason why you have to take action? That's absurd. So we would have buried them. So finally, after like prying at the police and paying tens of thousands of dollars in lawyer fees for nothing, just so that they would conduct an investigation to prove my innocence, not to charge me, not to perform an investigation to bring about charges, just so that I could say to the world, hey, look it, I'm innocent. I had to pay for that to get done. When I look around in the WWE, you can say what you want about me, but I can't look around that locker room and say that I was sitting across from a piece of shit. There really wasn't anyone in that locker room who was not at some point or another a good human to get to that point, bro, because you don't make it in the WWE with the present day structure and the corporate world of Fortune 500 business to get a piece of shit who gets more airtime on TV than any other individual. So for a year and a half, I was on 205 Live and Raw. I was on TV more than any other wrestler in the company, meaning Vince McMahon was investing more time in me than any other superstar, right? Time is money. That means he was investing money in me. He believed in me, and I had a great relationship with Vince. You think about, though, the guys that I worked alongside with, there was no shitty humans. You don't get there. You just don't make it. So to look at my 6-year run, to say I worked for the company, or maybe they were fed up with my antics or whatever inaccurate, assessments have been made. You have an opportunity to touch lives and touch people when you're there. And I had that opportunity. And I didn't take it lightly. Now you look at a person who accuses me and you look at their track record and you say to yourself, how is the police not doing anything right now? They're not doing anything. So when I found out I was innocent, y'all found out about a week or two later, right? Innocent in the sense that I don't have to go to court or trial. So y'all found out about a week later, 2 weeks later. In the meantime, I have a mom, family, and a bank account that's winding down and losing patience, and people that are losing patience, and fans that are losing patience. And in the meantime, I'm doing the smartest thing I could ever do by being social media silent for 4 or 5 months. Because I knew that when I did speak up that it was going to be in an extreme matter.
Once you got cleared of everything, WWE didn't reach out to you and say, hey, man.
I couldn't tell you. I blocked every single number in my phone that had a 203 in it.
Straight up.
Straight up.
Yep, there's no reason you can't go back now.
Yeah, there is.
Tell me.
Sciatica. I got nerve issues. Ask him about my morning, right? I was laying up. I can't walk, bro. Like, I can't do things physically that I once could do. And when I was in the end there getting to WrestleMania, I was saying to myself, I don't know if I'm going to make it to Mania. I didn't even know I was going to make it to Rumble.
Were you that beat up?
It was a week later. I was so beat up, man. Like, and I kayfabed the shit out of it.
So you don't want to go back?
Not anytime soon. My body needs time to recover. I'm not healthy right now, like, physically. I can't touch my toes, you know?
Dude, I can't touch my toes.
I used to be able to, though. Like,
okay.
I just was putting off so many things and burning the candle on both ends, you know? I was just living.
I've done that.
Living it. You know, when I was a heel and I was running hot as a heel and I had that title, I was going hard, man. I was showing up to work. I had a few nights out there in the world, boy, where I had no sleep, and you would have never known if you were watching on camera.
Ric Flair did it for 30 years.
I know.
You could do it for six.
But that's the thing. Ric Flair did it for 30, but if they took time off, I don't know if they could do it, bro. Dude, I think I could have went on another 10 years. And that's the thing that people have to realize. I would have worked with the WWE and for the WWE forever. I would have went until the wheels fell off. I would have wrestled until I physically could not do it any longer.
So if you hadn't got sent home because of this incident, you would have just still stayed in the ground.
Oh, I would have wrestled until they pulled me out of the ring like Rick.
Right.
Yeah, they would have had to drag me out of the ring.
But you got the break, and so now here you are. But man, you wouldn't have left.
Here's what happened to me. This is what changed my attitude. I got my voice taken away from me. And it's the only thing that I ever cared about, and the most important thing. In wrestling, I'll lay on my back for anybody, 1, 2, 3. A writer tries to write a line that I don't like in a promo, I ain't saying it. And I'm going to go talk to Vince because I don't feel like saying it. And Hunter's going to threaten my job. And Triple H is going to tell me I'm going to get fired because I ain't saying the shit. And the company's going to get copyrighted when we start singing Frank Sinatra. They're going to get fined $45,000. And I'm still going to get handed a fucking microphone the next fucking night. Every single time. So I started living like that. It's like, man, you guys have threatened me since I got in the door here. You have been hanging it over my head that you will fire me. Since the day I got hired, you have made it seem like it is everything and anything and the only thing. And it is it and the luxury and the be all end all to be here. You're lucky to be here. And in the end, I was looking at him in the face and going, you're fucking lucky to have me here.
You weren't working on those eggshells. A lot of people were.
I didn't walk on any eggshells at the end at all. At all. I didn't dress in the locker room. I changed by myself. When people got mad at me, I didn't care. And I just dealt with Vince. You know, I had plans on dropping my music with the WWE. Yeah. So I was working towards with Neil Lowey, Kevin Dunn, and Vince McMahon dropping my album going or a single or two going towards WrestleMania. Vince has me out there tweeting Conor McGregor. I'm about ready to get killed in the world. You know what I mean? This is real world. You know, like I pray I don't see Conor, man. Nah, I'm not a fighter, bro. Like, I'm an entertainer, dude. Vince is saying,
I believe you.
So you know, no, man. Vince has got me. He's given me the push of a lifetime. He wants me to be the biggest star in the company.
Yeah.
The first time I ever spoke to Vince McMahon and had a one-on-one meeting with him was when I came back from my concussion. I walked into his offices with a book that I had written. I wrote a promo book in NXT that's a couple thousand pages. And then I wrote lyrics on another like 400 pages. So I had like 1800 something pages of material, and I brought it to Vince and I put it down on his. I said, Mr. McMahon, I just wanted to let you know that for the past 5 years, you've been investing in me as a talent here in the company. I wanted to make sure that I made a major return on that investment for you. And in order to do that, I put my eggs in this basket, obviously not this one. And I showed him my body. You know what I mean? Like physically, like I put my eggs in this basket, not this one, you know? Like, and I was in better shape growing up playing football. I used to work out. Like, when I became a WWE wrestler, I became a writer, like crazy writer. I told Vince, I said, hey, man, I make music. I've written promos here for since I've been in NXT, and now that I'm up here, I want you to know that one day I want to make music, and I want to do it with you guys, and I want to do it the right way. Now's not the time, but when that time comes, I will come back. That's all. And I walked off. So that was the first time I ever met Vince. I sat outside of his office
for
hours.
What do you think about that?
He was mind blown. I think he was taken aback by it. But I showed him this blunt binder. Then fast forward to Toronto at the Airlines Arena. I don't remember what it was for. I had a conversation with Hunter that I don't think that any other talent in the business has had. He ripped me a new one, all right? He went so off, you know, he pulled me into his office and just went off. And here's what I'll tell you about that conversation. I will never repeat that conversation, but the crazy thing about that is the only person that knew about that conversation in the entire business was Neville, because he's my best friend and the only one I told shit to. Because I trust Neville. Hunter, at one point in this conversation, now mind you, I'm working with Vince on the music now with Kevin Dunn and Neil Lowey, and I don't think that that makes my boss, Hunter, very happy. Because ultimately, what Hunter probably feared happened. Me getting in trouble the way I did was probably why Hunter, the whole time in NXT and on the main roster, didn't want to give me a push, because why would he invest all of his money in a guy he thinks he's going to fuck it up, right? So I remember Hunter and Bray Wyatt would always... Bray Wyatt was like my OG, you know, like when I first got in FCW, and he was like, oh, you're going to go down in a ball of flames, boy. He would always tell me, you're going to go up in a ball of flames.
Why did he think that?
Because I did what I thought was best for my character a lot of the time, I guess, and didn't take advice. I didn't take advice. My only advice was don't take advice unless you call up Stone Cold and do it because Stone Cold said so. You know what I mean? Like, I was, the way I looked at it, man, is I'm not trying to be you. I'm not trying to be Triple H. The closest thing that I could think of that I'm trying to be right now is Stone Cold or The Rock, really, because I'm not trying to marry within the company and be here forever, all right? But there's a life for me outside of this, and I always want to give back to this business, wrestling. I'm never going to lose my roots. I'll continue to do shit with wrestling. But, like, he stood up in that room that day. Well, no, he didn't stand up. We were sitting in chairs, and he was going off, man. Triple H was going off. And he said to me, Enzo, you're not going to change the fucking world. And when he said that, I stood up and shot my chair to the point where it fell if I would have stood up. And I said, don't you get it? I am trying to change the fucking world. To which point Triple H stood up. He said, there's no getting through to you. Boiling hot, mad. And he walked me out of that room. And that was the truth. The truth was, is that they, my boss, Triple H, Vince, or whoever it was, were looking at me saying, this guy thinks he's going to fucking change the world. Like, what the fuck is he thinking? You know what I mean? But I got news for you. The people who are crazy enough to think they can change the world are the ones that do. And in that world, I was trying to change it. They were adhering to principles in that locker room that were written by men that, you know, gender persecution and you know, hazing and things that were going on back in the day that they don't really adhere to now, but those principles of the locker room and wrestler's court and things like that, man, I just let them know, bro, I'm above it and I ain't in it. So if y'all try to fucking hold me in wrestler's court, just understand I'm not going to be in wrestler's court. So if you want to get in the ring with me and do great business and be a good human and or talk to me outside of this, who are you as a human, you know? You know, I started a nonprofit organization called Report Card Kicks. Only currency we accept is report cards. You know, it's a long story, and I'll get there, and I'm sure I'll be out there talking and promoting it a lot more. But, you know, I think that I was the biggest radical that company had seen in so long, where the likes of people like me, they're not going to make it easy for. But the crazy thing about me was the fans. If it wasn't for the fans, I would have been fired 10 times over. But Vince liked me. So now I got Vince and the machine, I guess, because if Vince is behind you and you put a title on your waist and he's pushing you on your own program, and you got the fans, which now I'm a heel. Now I don't have the fans, right? But maybe I do. It was a gray area for me. The hopes was to turn me into one of the biggest stars, I guess, in the company. I can't call it. You know, I was about to be with Alexa Bliss. If you want to make Enzo a heel, what's the ultimate way to make him a heel, right? Screw over the girl and go with the skinny girl, right? Like, that is something everyone can relate to. Well, like, I mean, I think Nia's beautiful. I'd probably choose her over Alexa in real life. But I'm just saying, like, oh, he screwed her over because he was in the back room hooking up with Alexa when Nia walked in, and he was using Nia as his heater to win his title matches. That's how I become the biggest heel in the company. I don't think Nia or Alexa knew that. I think only Vince, and Vince told me that like a week or two before that. And I think that, you know, I would have wrestled for, I would have never, they would have had to fire me. I would have never quit. I would have never quit. I mean, my music video, Phoenix, has more millions of views on a Monday night than their main event does from that Monday night. So Monday Night War, I won that one.
Where did y'all film that at?
Out here in California. My little brother shot it on his camera.
How long did it take?
Two different shoots. The scene in the desert was a different day. The extras that were all there and everything, you know, just pulling strings, people we know in the business of... You know, and another thing is, you know, something that I called you and asked you for advice on was Barry Bloom and Eric Schreiber. Look at the WWE roster. You look up and down that roster. How many of those guys have agents or management? None. I mean, literally, what, Brock Lesnar and Jericho and Mike the Miz, Goldberg? That's it. I mean, literally, that's it. I signed with Barry Bloom and Eric Schreiber because they represented Triple H for 10 years. And they represent Goldberg and got him... crazy dough to come back and do WrestleMania. And they represent Jericho, who has the best contract in the business, where he's in and out the door and working in New Japan and making music. And I signed with Barry and Eric. What do you think they got me? Hate.
Yeah, but a lot of people thought that when you came out with Phoenix, that you were giving it to the fans.
Absolutely. So basically... I was giving all the fans that love me, that supported me through this, as I said in the song, a few marks that hated this for all my fans that waited. Entertainment's hottest free agent. I'm reincarnated. I shitted on the people that shitted on me, and I said thank you to the people that showed me love.
Copy. Okay.
So, like, I'm never going to address those schmarks and smart marks and people who think they know what the hell's going on. It's like, give me a break. Look at your job. Look at what you do. That's what you do for a living, is write articles about pro wrestling. I know what's going on. I was in it. You know what it's like to, you know, be walking and trip to the ring and then get up and no-sell it and pretend like you didn't mean to do it and everybody think it was a part of the show. And then you also know what it's like to trip so that people think that you didn't mean to trip, but you did so they could write about it on the dirt sheets. Like, oh, he's not even athletic. Like, look at each trip. Like, I'm never going to stoop to that level outside of big time controversial FUs. So controversy creates cash. Eric Bischoff wrote a book about it. Like, I know that. So I didn't steer away from my pro wrestling persona in my music with that release of Phoenix. It's like, I'm going to give you something to think about, talk about. That's what I'm going to do. You can hate it. You can love it. I don't care. You're going to talk about it. You're going to see it. And you're probably going to watch it again. You're probably going to watch it and watch it again. And then there's going to be fans that like it. And there's going to be people who never listen or never watch wrestling that maybe like some of my rap music. And that's the transition that I'm going for next. See, the first song that I released was Phoenix and Bury Me, because the company buried me, I thought. So like, when you fire me the next day after I've been accused of rape, that was where I was hurt. Because you could have, Rich Swann still had a job at the company with what he was going through, you know, like with a domestic dispute. And then he got, so... You painted the picture to the public right then, there, in that moment that potentially it could have been true. You didn't have my back. So for 6 years, I broke my back for you, and you didn't have my back. Go fuck yourself in that moment. That's what I'm thinking. you know, for like 2 days, 3 days, 4 days. Like, I'm like, okay, blocking every one of your numbers, never talking to you again, go F yourself. And then they call me and they're like, we need you to send the title back. Otherwise, we're not going to pay you out of your 90 days. It's like, really? You want a $300 title? You're afraid I'm going to go wrestle on the indies with it or something? You fucking idiots. You know I'm not going to be wrestling in the indies right now. Like, there's no one that can pay me enough to wrestle in the indies. I'll go to indie show and wrestle for free before I wrestle for money. I'm not going to set a value on me in the ring. You know, give me a break.
You know, I've talked in the past, and if you need this or that or whatever, you've called me for some of my advice. And sometimes it's you talking all the time. But I got my shit in every now and then. But my point is, when did you do Rosenberg's radio show? Because I was on there. He laid a beat down for you, started freestyling. When was that in time? 6 months ago? 12 months ago?
That was right, dude, right before I got fired, honestly.
Okay, so, dude, he's like a hip-hop aficionado. He knows the shit backward and forwards. Did he have any advice for you? Did you ask him for any advice? Did he say, hey, man, here's what I think? Or did you care what he thought? Or,
I mean, he's got that beauty in it, right?
He kind of make or break a lot of people, though.
Definitely. I've played Rosenberg some of my music before that. He's known about me and hip-hop, and I used to – that was the thing, man. Rosenberg used to play late night with Rosenberg on Hot 97, closing out, middle of the night, dropping unreleased hip-hop songs. And I would be closing out my draw at Hooters when I was managing the bar, playing Hot 97 over the radio. And when I first met Rosenberg through wrestling, I let him know. I used to listen to Late Night with Rosenberg when I was managing my bar. And me and him hit it off right away. And so I have a rapport with him where I text him and talk to him about some things and DM him here and there. If I needed Rosenberg, you know, I think I could go to him and ask for some help or for some advice. But what's crazy about my music right now is you'll find that the music industry is just like the wrestling business, where there's a lot of personas in music and a lot of them are built by an industry and built and backing and marketing and mechanisms to which we use in wrestling. And me, the most beautiful thing about my music to me is that I wrote every single word, every single melody over every single beat with my headphones on in airplanes all around the world as I was wrestling. I did not want the WWE involved in my making of my music because I knew what that would lead to. I brought my music to Vince McMahon when it was a finished product. And that's when he bought in on it with Kevin Dunn. My music, I'm literally going to set the world on fire. I'm going to be one of the biggest stars in music, and I know it. So I'm hesitant to sign with a label right now. I'm very hesitant because I own all of my beats because Spiff, my roommate who directs for Drake, has so many friends in music that he got them to sign over 100% of the rights to me because he told them he's a WWE wrestler, he doesn't curse on his music, and he's selling it to Vince McMahon, and he can't be in a meeting with you there saying you're taking a cut or a percentage of it. The only person Vince needed to negotiate terms or contracts with was me. You're doing business with just me. I don't need anyone to release my music because I have a distribution deal. I have a little brother with a red camera who chops and edits all the footage. I cut the middleman out completely. If I want to sign with a label, I might, I can, I will. But mind you, I'm a renaissance man. I'm trying to be Jared Leto and Childish Gambino. I'm trying to make music videos, stand-up comedy, act, direct, produce, be Adam Sandler, put all my boys in my movies, and make it my vision. And all of my opportunities have afforded more investments in my own brands and businesses. Like in wrestling, I invested my wrestling money in my music and my clothing line and other things and properties and my brother's camera and my brother's education. Like those things afford me now to make other forms of entertainment and do it my way. So the vision isn't yours, it's mine. I have a written word that I had said. It's 9 minutes and 26 seconds long. All right. I filmed it like Do the Right Thing, the Spike Lee movie, the scene with him and Radio Raheem. Most people won't get that, but the ones that do, I really appreciate it. I filmed it and it's done and shot done. And Dusty Rhodes would kill me if I let this thing out because it's 9 minutes and 26 seconds. Dusty, he couldn't get me to speak for 90 seconds. 2 minutes, you know? Yeah, the old too long going. If anybody wants to listen to this 9 minute and 26 second spoken word that I do, it'll answer so many questions as to what's really going on in my mind, you know, and open you up to knowing who like Eric Arndt is in a sense, like and what I stand
for. You
gonna
put that out there?
I'm gonna put it out there today or tomorrow. Honestly, it's shot and I just don't know how it's going to translate and or if people are going to, how they're gonna take it. I might just let it go just because I have a YouTube channel that I haven't really like put out and up yet because there's a lot of content and things that I'm working on.
Dude, how old are you now?
31.
Where are you going to be when you're 41? Or where do you see yourself?
Probably in the WWE, right? 41? 10 years from now?
You got anything else you want to say?
To all the fans that believed in me and supported me that are listening to this today, you're the ones who got me where I was. I owe you every bit of everything that is on my plate, everything that I've eaten, everything that I haven't eaten yet. Like, you've been putting food on the table for me and my family. With your help, I'm gonna finish paying off that mortgage on Pop's crib. You know what I mean? You know, I'm well on my way, and the opportunities that I've been given by the WWE to meet and put smiles on faces, never lose sight of that. So that's the big picture with that company. Whether you could look at any company and look at all the evils that exist in every single aspect of life, in every company, every corporation. Just think about those kids that are sitting there. Their parents are spending disbelief for a minute, and these kids are really believing what they're seeing, and they're really in love with it. And you have the opportunity of a lifetime to touch those people. I apologize to any parents or anybody who heard Phoenix and was offended by it, that because their kids heard it and there was a lot of cursing and whatnot, that I apologize for. But I'm not going to apologize for speaking out against wrongdoing, social injustices, and all politics aside. You know, I think you got to find a way to bring some love in here today, man. Black woman, white man, tan, trans, and gay. In the words of Marvin Gaye, war is not the answer, only love can conquer hate. So that's amore, baby. Just thank you to everyone who supports me, and thank you for the WWE for the opportunity of a lifetime to work with y'all, and I'm out, bitch.
Shut it down! Hi, I'm John Taffer. You probably know me because I've rescued thousands of bars, hundreds of them on TV.
That's your future broken!
I'm also a best-selling author, and I've owned and operated a bunch of other businesses. But now, I'm here on Podcast One with my new show, No Excuses. I only yell at assholes. Every Tuesday, I'm going to give it to you straight. I'm giving you all things bar rescue, insider peeks of what's going on the set, current events and topics you care about, with in-your-face analysis, and you know how straight I can be. And I'm going to have unforgettable guest interviews with the world's most interesting people, and I'm going to ask them the questions that nobody else has ever asked them. And yes, sometimes I can be a bit of an ass, but I'm going to shut it down every Tuesday and make no excuses. It's going to be the number one show here on Podcast One. Listen to it every Tuesday on PodcastOne.com, on the Podcast One app, and on Apple Podcasts. And remember, rate and review it, or I'm going to shut you down.
All right, everybody, give me the go home. Cue, it's time to wrap up this podcast, ride off in the sunset. But before I do that, I want to thank my guest, Enzo Amore, Real One, for coming by the crib and shooting a breeze here at 317 Gimmick Street. And before I give you a couple of plugs, a long time ago, a couple of years ago, I interviewed Leon White, Big Van Vader, who just recently passed away. Since that episode is in the archives, and not all of you have access to the archives, I decided to re-release that interview. And that interview will play this coming Thursday on the Steve Austin Show. It's a conversation I had with Leon from a couple of years ago. I can't remember all the details of it. I just thought it would be an interesting time, a good time, to bring that interview back, as so many people all over the world are mourning the loss of one of the greatest big men in the history of the business. It's a shame that he wasn't in the Hall of Fame before he passed away. And Big Leon had a hell of a career, starting over there with AWA and going there to Otto Wanz in Germany, and his unbelievable career in Japan, going through WCW and ended up in WWF. Man, that guy just had an unbelievable run, and I'm going to play that conversation that I had with Leon on the Thursday show. Hey, man, ProWrestlingTees.com/Steve Austin has my Broken Skull Ranch shirts.
And the best damn IPA on the planet is Broken Skull IPA from El Segundo Brewing Company. And you can find these at Whole Foods and Total Wines if you live in California. I've been hearing reports, people coming in to the Northern California area and are not able to find it. I'll ask about the distribution of Broken Skull IPA because this is, in my opinion, the best IPA in the United States of America. And when you come to California, you should be able to buy it. So I'm going to try to get to the bottom of that and find out where it is specifically. If you don't live here, check InsideTheCellar.com. Hopefully, they have some inventory and see if they ship to your state. And I'll tell you what, man, being out here and enjoying the outdoors as much as I ever have, I'm using my pocket knives a whole lot because you always need a pocket knife, whether it's to pry something off, like I was using in my pickup truck the other day when I bought me a barbecue grill and had to pry off one of the little holes to put my bungee cord through. I cut stuff up. I constantly use my pocket knife. Everybody should have one. If you don't use it to cut stuff up, use it for self-protection. The cold steel Broken Skull knife is one sharp bastard. And the working man knife, equally as sharp, just a different point, a little bit different configuration, a little bit smaller. And you get both of them at my new Amazon store. And just go to amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin or go directly to the Cold Steel Knives website where you will find the Broken Skull, the Working Man, along with a plethora of everything they make. They make great knives, and that's the bottom line. And I want to say one more thank you to all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show, especially DDP Yoga, Nickelodeon, Geico, TheraWorks, and Hims. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. Please support them because they support us. You can find all my sponsors at podcast1.com under the Killer Deals button at the top of the page. Folks, I am on social media, Twitter and Instagram at Steve Austin BSR. And until next time, my name is Steve Austin, and I'll catch your ass down the road.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at podcast1.com. That's podcastone.com.
Did you know that 66% of men start to lose their hair by the time they're 35? It happens so fast you barely have time to notice. Well, listen up. Baldness can be optional, and Hims is here to help. Hims is a wellness brand for the modern man. A one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and sexual wellness, making men's personal care trusted, easy, and affordable. Hims offers FDA-approved, medical-grade products shipped directly to your door. No pharmacy lines or doctor visits. Sound treatment and prevention backed by medicine and science. Look better, feel better, do better with Hims. So save some money and save your damn hair. Go to forhims.com/unleashed to get yourself a trial month of hair loss prevention products for just $5.